out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 18th of January, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As it's Thursday, we're joined by Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson today. Matt, how are you doing today?
The music isn't half bad, actually. You know, it's you know, could be a lot worse. Put it like that.
I think it's pretty good. I think it's I'm very pleased with the new music that we've got written for us. We've actually got another track out there as well, which we haven't actually used yet. But that one there, I think, is particularly good. It's a little bit longer than usual, and we've actually got our first female voiceover there, which makes
it's
nice.
It's got a
change.
Bit of a CNN feel to it.
Yeah,
that kind of upbeat thing. Yeah,
yeah, professional sounding. Anyway, we've got I believe we've got an article from CNN today that you wanted to discuss, Matt, about white supremacy and white extremists that apparently are responsible for all the killings in America or something like that. I guess I'd better quote this and then pass it over to you, because I know that you've been doing some research into it. And this is from this is a CNN article, and it says white supremacists were responsible for the majority of extremist killings in 2017 compared to other groups, according to a newly released report by the Anti-Defamation League. Of the 34 people the League's Center on Extremism found were killed by domestic extremists last year, right-wing extremists killed 20 people, with 18 of those killed by white supremacists, it said in the report released on Wednesday. Extremism in any form is an issue. Foreign-born, politically-minded extremism, or racially-focused extremism, what the data tells us, in the past 10-plus years, it is far-right-wing extremism, white supremacists and their ilk, that are responsible for more extremist-related murders than any other group, said Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO of the Anti-Defamation League. Last year was the fifth deadliest for extremist violence since 1970, when the ADL began tracking these types of crimes. Concretely, it confirms extremists feel emboldened in the current environment. Right-wing extremists in particular were responsible for nearly 60% of extremist-related fatalities last year, Greenblatt said. The data lays it bare that this is not an exaggeration, as some would try to paint it. Well, I can't recall any white people blowing themselves up or setting off nail bombs or beheading anyone in America last year, so I don't know where they're getting this from. I know you know where they're getting it from, Matt.
A few months ago, I came across the Department of Homeland Security's report. I can't recall the name off the top of my head, but it was very convenient because it was these kind of acts of violence and killings over the last 5 years, and they had all the case numbers. Being a full-time researcher and having somewhat of a strong stomach, I decided to look them all up. And I went through each and every one. This is all, of course, public information. And I was really, I was both, you know, I wasn't shocked. I'm still shocked for some bizarre reason, but I shouldn't be. And absolutely enraged. Not one of them could be considered an act of violence that had any political motivation at all. Let alone on the right of the political spectrum, let alone racial. Almost everyone was a drug deal gone bad. And in everyone, the police at the scene made it clear that there was no political agenda here. the only thing that these people can even remotely point to is what happened at Charlottesville. Now, I was not an eyewitness. I was at Charlottesville. I got maced there, but I wasn't an eyewitness to what happened with the car. The first video I saw showed the left clawing, trying to tear the a windshield out and surrounding the car. I mean, they clearly were trying to get at him, and the person was not hit by the car and had a obesity related heart attack on the side of the road. Now, this is a version of Johnson's Law. How many people are going to bother to look up every damn case like I did? How many people are going to go beyond the headline? And even more depressingly, how many people are going to ask, what the hell is the ADL doing as the official statistician of right-wing violence? That's my introductory comment here.
Well, I think you raised a couple of points there. The word extremism and what that means, because they didn't actually say terrorist here, but they said extremist. And extremist seems to be linked now with terrorism, and terrorism is violent acts to achieve a political motive behind them, trying to cause a change in government or a change in policy by smashing things up or killing people. That's terrorism. And that seems now to be linked with extremism. And when you look up the word extremism, they say that it's far right groups. It's groups that are it doesn't mention the far left at all when you look up extremism. It just says far right. And I've been looking at Wikipedia on this to try and find this out, exactly what they mean by extremism. And it just seems to mean, white supremacists is what they say. And then they say white supremacists, these extremists, what they believe in is a superior race and an inferior race. So it's all built on falsehoods. We don't believe in superior or inferior. We just believe in differences between them, and we'd like to have our own space. That doesn't mean that we're extreme. We don't believe in using unlawful violence to achieve our aims. And the two instances that this article produces are the one that you just mentioned there, Matt, Heather Hayes, and the autopsy report says that she died of a heart attack, which was related to obesity. And it's her own mother that reported this, that's what the autopsy report said. And the second one is some crazy guy on a train who shot or killed two people. And he was acting quite crazy. I don't believe he was a member of any organization. James Fields wasn't even a member of any organization. And it's come out this week that an Antifa organization had been boasting about shooting at him. So he was escaping from somebody shooting at him. This is James Fields at Charlottesville. When he came down that road full of gang members who then beat his car, looks like with a baseball bat, somebody else hit the other side of it, and he clearly panicked. He clearly wasn't intending to kill people. This wasn't a jihadi on the rampage trying to kill as many people as possible. This was a frightened young lad at his first demonstration that had turned into a riot with leftists wanting to kill him. It certainly wasn't a terrorism. And I don't think this other one was either. And these are the only two instances that they can find, yet they claim that there's 34 people that have been killed by white right-wing extremists? Do you know anything about these other deaths, Matt, at all?
The only thing I could think of, they don't bother to offer a link here, which is oddly suspicious. But I believe all the ADL did is cut and paste from the DHS. And so I guess if you press them, they'll say, okay, we get our information from the Department of Homeland Security. At least there, as I said before, I went through these cases. The other aspect of this that's disturbing is that very few of these cases have been settled. They're still going through the court system. Yet here you have a government organization, DHS, and a quasi-government organization, the ADL, saying in public that these actually occurred. Suggesting to me that now these guys can't get a fair trial. And especially when the government is now weighing in on this, it should be a mistrial. So even if these people were correct, they can't say what they're saying because none of these have actually been resolved. through the court system. They do mention that, trying to be balanced here. But that's not the purpose of this article, and no one really is going to care whether or not, you know, it's guilty until proven innocent in trial by media. So the actual trial doesn't make any difference. And the point of this article, though, is to have a typical American reader scan it, have this implanted in their mind. So at a conversation a month from now, they'll say, well, we know the white supremacists control violence today. And the other point, in addition, is we need to remember we can't use the argument that, you know, the system doesn't play fair intellectually. There, you know, the double standards are built into the, you know, the double standard isn't an insult that we can throw at these people, because we know that Antifa and the far left are part of the system. They have no interest in a double standard. They love the double standard. They have no commitment to objectivity. They have no commitment to truth here. And there's a certain naivete that a lot of us have that we still expect the system to play fair. I say this only because you mentioned the idea that the far left was not included in extremism, which I really don't mind, because as far as American life and English life is concerned, they're not. They're a very important part of how the system operates. These are groups that the government uses to terrorize people when it itself doesn't have the legal authority to do so.
I think one positive thing I am seeing just recently, Matt, is on the television over here in Britain, on the call-in shows, people have been saying, what about the far left? What about the extremists on the far left? Of course, they always qualify it by saying, oh, you've also got these terrible extremists on the far right, but they're also just as bad on the far left. And the truth is, that, as you say, that the far left, their crimes are covered up. And if anybody has mentioned any sympathy for any nationalist ideals, then they will get called an extremist, as we see has happened here. Because the only two people that they can actually find aren't two people that are members of any political organization. They're just people that the press has said are nationalists. I mean, James Fields, he turned up at the demonstration, but he wasn't a member of anything. There was a photograph taken of him holding a shield from one nationalist group. And this other person, there's nothing to say that he was part of any nationalist group. He just may have said a few racist things when he attacked two Arabs on the bus. And it's the same that we see over in Britain when we saw that Joe Cox was killed. The guy that killed her, he wasn't a member of any nationalist organization. They said that he was a Holocaust denier because he had World War II videos in his house. And we're seeing the same, as you mentioned there, about this guilty before you've even been in court. We're particularly seeing that at the moment with young nationalists who have been arrested and are accused of being members of National Action, a group which ceased to exist over a year ago. And yet these, whenever you read about it in the press, it says they are members of National Action, as if they've already been found guilty. National Action members arrested, charged with being a member of a proscribed organization and preparing terrorist acts, only at no point were the public in any danger, because the terrorist acts were just printing off stickers. And they're not actually members of National Action because the group doesn't exist anymore. But they lie about it, and the press itself prejudices the readers, and it prejudices the jury. I mean, really, I think we need to get good lawyers so that we can point out that stuff like this prejudices a jury. Surely they've got to hear that in a trial. I mean, they like to make a pretense that we still have justice and the trials still function. So surely if a lawyer was to bring that up, people have already been tried and found guilty according to this report. That would count in the accused's favor, I would have thought.
Well, if I were a defense attorney in these cases, at least in the American versions, and the difference between the British and the American, this is a government agency saying that these people are guilty by listing them on a list of terrorist acts that have already been committed. The first thing as a defense attorney I would do is demand a mistrial. The state itself has made a judgment it had no right to make. Now, the idea you had about challenging this kind of thing actually may get bipartisan support, because although in this particular issue, it benefits the left, you don't have to be a genius to figure out how this could prejudice juries all over the place. if the press can be this irresponsible, if government agencies can be this irresponsible. You know, I mean, I've still got to wrap your brain around the notion that Bill Cosby's innocent, as was obvious from the beginning. But the press said openly he was guilty before any evidence had been collected at all. This is a deadly issue. I woke up, sort of my black pill on the subject was Edgar Steele. If you remember, I don't know, like 15 years ago, great lawyer, a friend of mine, accused of trying to murder his wife, which was laughable. It wasn't even in his handwriting. It was really just a really badly contrived case. He went to jail and they killed him in there. And that was it. Not one person is going to defend him. No media outlet, no watchdog group is going to run and defend him. And it struck me hard. Because it meant that they could kill any one of us in jail for any reason whatsoever. And we know that nobody with any kind of clout at all is going to care. No one's even going to look into the issue. And those who do look into the issue that have any kind of authority are going to come under pretty vicious attack. And that frightened the hell out of me. And it's something that we need to. So the legal aspect of this, generally speaking, is actually very frightening. And of course, the conclusion to it all is that the point of what these people are doing here, again, there's no interest in truth or objectivity. This isn't, you know, journalism is long dead. The point is to ban us in America, to import some kind of a law that you have in Western Europe that bans anything the Jews don't like. And that's very difficult to do here. I think it's very difficult to do over there. But that's really what this is all about. You call them a violent terrorist group or a guerrilla organization or something like that. Now it becomes a war. You know, and First Amendment stuff doesn't mean anything. Criminalizing this is the ultimate goal here.
Well, you bring up J. Edgar Steele there and what happened to him. And I would like to think that since that time, we have now got lawyers that are inclined to help us. And you've got Kyle Bristow over there, an attorney who works for Richard Spencer. I see that he's just won. I believe he's won again, 27 grand in expenses. Or something, and he's got in his latest case, he's been handling these free speech cases for Richard Spencer. And over here, we've got someone who stands up for us that is speaking up for Alison Chablow at the moment. And I know that these lads that have been accused as being members of National Action, they've got a good lawyer speaking for them. I believe it's somebody that used to work for the English Defence League. So it's not as if it's all doom and gloom. We have got people that are prepared to help us in the legal system now, which we may not have had back then, because J. Edgar Steele, he was a lawyer. He was the guy that would have helped people out, but they went after him. So he didn't have anyone. I think that was part of the issue at the time. And I think another part of this that we haven't spoken about yet is the fact that it's the ADL. Now, wasn't that started by Jews to cover up a horrific crime of another Jew that had raped a young girl in a pencil factory, and they formed this organization to get all the money off the Jews together so that they could defend this guy and get him off? And this organization in itself began as a way to cover up crimes of the Jews and blame white people for them. That's the whole reason for existence of the ADL, isn't it?
You're unfortunately absolutely correct. And it serves the same, you know, the ADL has been involved in training police departments in this country, training elements of the National Guard, judges, everything to create this kind of a phony consensus that you know, action needs to be taken against us. The Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, of course, is a Jewish organization that's its own independent Masonic lodge by its own constitution. So it's deeply involved in Kabbalah and obviously the ruling class. It receives donations from every major corporation in America. Obviously neocons as well as liberal ones, including foreign governments. It's a multi-billion dollar organization of immense power, that very few people are going to want to fight. Remember, you bring up a good point that there are some good people who are willing to defend us. But of course, that implies that the law would be enforced in these cases. Yeah, free speech cases, that's one thing. You know, the ADL has done that for us. And, I mean, I'm sorry, the ACLU has done that for us in the past. That's great. No. I'm talking about far more serious issues where, you know, the state will simply say, too bad. Now, there was no evidence to put Edgar Steele in prison. There was even probable cause. Everyone knew he was killed there. They didn't even do a good job trying to cover it up. That was the whole point. The state had no interest in following the law there, and so they didn't. The point is that the point is that nobody had the ability, legal or otherwise, to defend them. There was no talk about it in the press, and the there was in some of the mainstream press. It obviously wasn't big news, but every sentence was made up, completely concocted. And it's a Johnson's Law issue. No one's going to fact check this. No one's going to care. No one's going to, they're not going to print any letters to the editor, so they can say what they please.
Well,
that's the frightening part. And I don't want to be all black pill on all this. I don't. I really don't. But this is, you know, it's bringing back all of these Edgar Steele memories.
Well, I just to bring it back to now and the present, I mean, we've got James Fields. We're going to have his trial is going to be coming up soon. And you would have thought that all the world's eyes would be upon that trial just because of how important Charlottesville was and what happened there. They're not going to be able to just brush this under the carpet. That trial is going to be watched by the media, and the media are going to want to be reporting on it. And if the truth gets spoken there, even just by him, then that is going to be seen by people. I think they're really stuck there because they've portrayed it as if he is a terrorist, as if he killed Heather Heyer. And yet we know that that isn't the truth. That isn't what happened. And you can see that from the YouTube video, from the footage of the car. And you can see that we know that from the autopsy report as well. And we know that. We know that when he left that area, he drove for 10 minutes and then just stopped his car. And the first thing he said was, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." He wasn't saying, did I kill those people? Wonderful. How many did I get? He was, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And he was really shocked when he heard that, there had been a death. It was clearly an accident, but the way the media have framed it is as if he was a terrorist and he was copying these jihadis that do that on purpose. But I don't think they're going to be able to get away with that when it comes to the court case. They're going to be in real trouble because there's going to be real pressure that is the outcome that has to come out. But it's not going to stand up against the real story. I think it's going to be like the Trayvon Martin case, when there was all that pressure that George Zimmerman was going to be found guilty, and he wasn't. And that other white officer with Michael Brown. And there was all that pressure that he was going to be found guilty, but he wasn't, was he?
Well, now, so this is going to go to trial. Are we absolutely certain about that?
Well, it has to, yeah. I mean, he's had his bail hearings, but that's it. He hasn't. I don't believe he's pled guilty or innocent or anything yet. They've had a hearing, and he's going to have to stay on remand. And he's got a defense lawyer who isn't really that good, unfortunately. But hopefully we've got some people that they can't put him in solitary confinement. He must be in the same place that the other people that have been held after Charlottesville. And hopefully they'll be able to talk to them. I know people have sent him Christmas cards and sent him letters and support. So, you know, he's got to understand that, there are those of us who know that he didn't do this as a terrorist act. I'm sure it's going to it's going to have to come to
you're right. I mean, we want to put a positive spin on this. A jury trial would be a disaster for the system. On the other hand, what I was referring to isn't so much a trial like this. I want to be wrong, but I would be shocked if it actually went to a full jury trial. My point was, if they just wanted to kill him in prison, they'll get away with it and don't even have to be that creative about it. You know, what they did to Milosevic, or, you know, there are a whole bunch of guys that they, which is really how the system operates. And no one's going to look into it. And, you know, that's how it's good. Now, a jury trial, I want to be wrong about this, but I can't picture that happening. And if they lose, that's a serious matter for the system. You're absolutely right about that.
Well, he wants to be very careful then, doesn't he? I was thinking that you were saying that because I mean, I'm not fully aware of the legal system that you have over there. Over here, you have to have a jury there. If it's a murder trial, it has to go to Crown Court and there has to be a jury. It cannot just be a magistrate that pronounces.
Right. Yeah, that's the same thing. The difference between America and England in that respect is that the American jury has to be unanimous. I think there's one state where you could have one dissent. I think that's Montana. I could be wrong. But I know in Britain, you can have a couple of dissenters and still have a conviction. That can't happen here.
Yeah, that's a fairly new thing, that as well, because it's supposed to be unanimous. It's supposed to be 12 people unanimous. But then if it goes on for a couple of days, they say, well, we will accept 11 to 1.
Actually, the only reason I know this is because I was just reading the story about the drummer for Judas Priest, Dave Holland, who was convicted of child molestation years after he left the band. And I was shocked that there were two votes against his conviction, and yet he was still convicted. I did not realize that was a case in Britain. But that couldn't happen here. You would have what happened in the Cosby case, where you had jurors who couldn't come to an agreement, which, is saying they can't convict them. The chances of them trying to retry the case are very, very small. You know, he beat it. You have to have unanimity here. But that's the only difference. And plus, the lawyers have to be on the bar of the state Edgar Steele could only practice in Idaho and I think Montana. So lawyers are hemmed into the state whose bar exam that they've taken. I don't know how that case is in Britain. Maybe it's more centralized.
Well, I think you could have whoever you like, so long as they're in Britain. Doesn't matter if they're in Wales or Scotland.
Yeah. Well, everything is based on state and even county law in America. But anyway, the point that we've been trying to make here is that banning our movement is the ultimate goal. And when the regime wants something, you know, they're going to get it. We just have to be ready, you know, with our own structure to be able to respond when it happens. I have no optimism about that. Now, you notice in this article we're talking about here, it says this increase in violence is because of the Trump administration. They say that what you just read up there, in this current environment, they're now more free to act.
I keep hearing that over here as well. The current environment, the environment that President Trump has created, it's nothing to do with Trump. The invasion of America, the fact that the white people are being replaced, has been going on for decades. It didn't just suddenly happen last year. You know, it's a culmination of everything that's been going on in America that has created this polarization that you've got over there now. And it's not just in America, it's in Britain as well. And I think one of the things that plays into this, Matt, is because President Trump has said that he's stopping funding for the intelligence services to watch the quote unquote white supremacist groups. He stopped the funding for that and said it needs to be concentrated on Islamic terrorism. That's one of the reasons why I think that they're pushing this article. But it's the same in Britain. You know, they push this idea that it's not just Islamic terrorists. There are white terrorists as well, white supremacist terrorists. Well, we've got a bit of good news we can finish on anyway. There's a new story in Ireland where there was a black African gang that had been terrorizing the area. And this is something that goes on in Australia as well, in lots of places. These Sudanese gangs, African gangs, moving, claiming to be refugees, and they have all their teenage kids with them, and they just run riot. They home invasions, turning shops over, stabbing people, mugging people, raping people, and the Gardaí were completely ineffective, said that they just couldn't do anything about it. They didn't have enough manpower, probably were frightened that they were going to get called racist. And apparently a motorcycle gang cleared the area up and cleaned the area up and went after the two ringleaders and gave them a good pasting. And now there's been no more trouble from the African gang. And they were calling themselves the Hells Angels. And since that's a uniquely American thing, we're not actually sure whether this group really was Hells Angels affiliated with America or just some people calling themselves that. But it's good to hear that a vigilante group formed and saw off this African gang. So there's a bit of a white pill that we can end on, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the bikers really have stepped up to the plate really over the last couple of years, but really the last 30 or 40 years. You know, being a biker is the last place where a white guy can be tough. It's a feared white archetypal role. And there's something about it that lends itself to right-wing politics. Russia, you have the Night Wolves. Hell's Angels is a international group, although I don't think that they have abroad is that large. Anyone can call it. You know, it's actually a big corporation, to be honest with you. These biker gangs are, I think, as things get worse and worse, they're going to be essential to our security and our safety. I got to learn how to ride a bike, a motorcycle, because those guys, I think, are going to become more and more important when it comes to physical safety.
Well, you certainly look like you fit in, Matt, from the photos that I've seen. I just see you in a leather jacket, denim jacket, cutoffs on a bike. I think it would quite suit you.
I really look like everyone thinks I am. You know, I look like it. I know how to ride a bicycle, of course, but I've never actually ridden a motorcycle. It's actually something that appeals to me. But everyone just thinks I'm normie who see me on the streets. Oh, it's some old biker there. You know, I don't mind that. And I don't mind that because it's still a mystique that white men can still be tough in and feared even in that role. And I think we could really use that as time goes on.
Well, that's a good image to have. I mean, when you think of bikers, you certainly don't think of Negroes. It's always white people.
I saw one black guy on a motorcycle years ago, and I almost drove off the road. It was such a bizarre experience. That is a white phenomenon.
Definitely a white archetype. So hopefully we'll hear more from right-wing bikers in the future. Anyway, Matt, thank you very much for coming on today. I'll be back tomorrow with Billy Roper. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. God bless and hail victory. We'll be right back.